Let's start. Any questions? We might go a bit later than usual. We are starting late. So yesterday we discussed phonons. And somebody asked like what it is good for. So I would like to start with just 2 minutes of sketching the calculation that you would complete in the tutorial. So what we are interested in is calculating the energy of the ions at temperature T. So we are going to take expectation value. This is the thermal expectation value of the energy of the ions. We saw the Hamiltonian for the phonons that can be written as, so let me write it this way. So I'm summing over all k less than the Debye wave vector. And this is expectation value. The Hamiltonian can be written as sum over k, h bar omega k, bk dagger bk plus half. So what we are interested in calculating is the specific heat at constant volume. This is temperature derivative of this energy. The average is thermal. So you'll see this half is irrelevant. And you can write down CV as, so the reason for doing this is in calculations, in many calculations in condensed matter, you would have sums over momentum. And typically these sums over momentum would be converted into integrals in momentum space. And from integrals in momentum space, we'd go to an integral in energy using density of states. So the way this works is you would write now CV, which is the derivative over there. So this simply becomes the temperature derivative, integral. This from this sum over k, I'm going to an integral. This part is relatively straightforward. And I will multiply with the volume factor. And then I have h bar omega k. And now I can write it as expectation value of nk. So this half is irrelevant because I'm taking the temperature derivative. And the thermal average is now just on the number operator and the number operator for phonon. So it's the occupation number of the phonon mode, which is labeled by the wave vector k. So from this, we want to go to an integral over energy. So one way to do this is introduce a delta function, a Dirac delta function. So what we do is here, I'm going to write this as an integral over energy and a Dirac delta function E minus epsilon K. And then I will write it as E. By the way, this thermal expectation value for the occupation occupation number of phonons, this we are going to replace with beta epsilon k minus 1, where epsilon k is h bar omega k. So I can write this expression. Right? So the point is this expression is same as this. So this contributes when E is EK, EK e to the power beta EK minus 1 is just this expression. Now I will use the definition of density of states. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to perform the momentum integration first. So I'll write it as integral over dE omega. And let's now write down d cube k 2 pi cube delta E minus EK. Now, this is the definition of density of states. So in the tutorial, you would start from this expression and conclude that the specific heat at low temperatures should vanish as the TQ. Any questions? So now let's talk about, so this is one. One-way phonons are useful. They explain the behavior of specific heat. Phonons are also responsible for superconductivity. And to discuss that, we first have to talk about electron-phonon interaction. And then later in the lecture, we'll get to phonon-mediated electron-electron interactions. So you remember we wrote down this big Hamiltonian. We had Hamiltonian for the ions, kinetic energy. We had kinetic energy for the electrons. We had ion-ion interaction. We had electron-electron interaction. And then we had a term that included ion-electron interaction. So this part deals with that term. So we are going to focus on V, ion electron. This can be written as sum over I and N, V so here RI is electronic coordinate, or let's write electronic position operator. And Rn is ionic position operator. Now, this Hamiltonian is still in first quantized form. So these are position operators. You remember the form where we were able to commute this as a function with other field operators? We were able to do that because when we write it in second quantized form, we go to position representation. And in going to position representation, we insert. So if you have this quantity, now it will be Rn. This is Ri, Rn. So at some point in your, when you try to write down the second quantized Hamiltonian, you will deal with this quantity. And after this, the potential will become a function. So let's start with this interaction. We can also just put the form. So let's say this is In E square over 4 pi epsilon naught 1 over mod Ri minus Rn. Now, typically, how we will go to second quantized notation, we'll choose a complete basis for two-particle Hilbert space, and then we'll write down the potential. So this, now this this is a two-particle operator. It's acting on Ri, and so Ri and Rn. This will act on two-particle states, psi m and psi n. And this, we can insert an identity here. And this identity can be written as bra and ket in two particle Hilbert space. And in the end, you will be left with sum over jk v jk mn psi j psi k. And now these are matrix elements. Of the potential operator. Now you can calculate these matrix elements in the position representation. And when you go to position representation, you would insert position bra and kets here and here, and then you would have a scalar product here, and this will just become a function, and then you'll have wave functions here. So in the end, you can derive an expression. So you would get an expression like the total potential energy is... So you can do the whole process that we did in the first week. You can insert the identity, for example, this. So now you start with this expression. This is two particle, this is one two particle term. Now you have many two particle terms. So write down the V total as sum and then apply the symmetrizer and anti-symmetrizer. When you go through the whole process, you will end up finding that this is VJK, VMN, and then you have BJ, dagger, BK dagger, BM, BN. Now you can write down, you can go to the momentum representation, these quantum numbers will become K, and you can also write this in terms of fields and so on. So the idea is to do the same thing for this potential. Now, this is going to be slightly tricky because we are not going to assume, that the ions, they are held fixed at their equilibrium position and they're allowed to move only slightly. So Ri is a position operator for electrons. It can take any value. This Rn, we will write. So the position operator for the ions, we are going to write it as Rn naught plus Un. Any questions so far? Yes.
Your V total, the Bs are, do they create electrons or?
So right now, this is for bosons. Equivalent term is found if they're electrons. So in our case, these, if we had both, so the reason I write it this way is the following. If you had interaction between electrons, you would have all electronic operators, right? If you had bosons, you would have all bosonic operators. This term is slightly tricky, what we are going to derive, because it will involve electrons and phonons.
So it doesn't look like that?
No. In fact, it would have three operators. So for electrons, it's only going to look like single particle term, but it's also going to involve bosonic operators. Any other questions? So let's just put this in this expression V and try to expand. Any questions about, so one trick that we used that is worth remembering, when you write this in fields, in the form of fields, this total operator, you would have, let's put half for double counting, you'd have an integral. So now I'm writing a two-particle term for electrons. You'll have this, you'll have E square over 4 pi epsilon naught r minus r prime, and then you will have field operators. So some, in this case, this is just a function, and it commutes with all the field operators. And a way, a trick to remember when it's a function, when it's operator, is just to look at what is in front. If you're integrating over a coordinate for the potential, you will have a function. In the first quantized form, where these are still operators, you'd always have a sum over each individual particle. In second quantized form, you will never have the sum over particles. The sum over particles goes away, and you will have fields, and you are going to have integrals. So let's write down, use this, and let's write down this potential, ion electron. So this will have the first term in the expansion, where the ions are simply at their equilibrium position. And then it will have a second term. Now, because there is this minus sign, when we Taylor expand, the first term will have a minus sign. I, n, u n dot the gradient r n of this potential. And this is evaluated at the equilibrium position. Now, this term is something that we have already seen, right? So this term is interaction between electrons and equilibrium position of ions. This is the term which describes electrons in a periodic potential that is provided by the ions. And this term gives rise to Bloch bands. Now, it is this term that gives rise to electron-phonon interactions. Any questions so far? So the idea is to write this term. This term we know how to deal with. The idea is to write this term in second quantized form. Now, for the electrons, this term has only one coordinate. So you can see from here that in terms of electrons, it is a single particle term. It involves only one electronic coordinate, right? We know how to write a general single, so remember we did this for a general single particle operator in second quantized notation. You can write this as TGJK. So you can look at the notes from the first week. Now here, these both will be, so either this will be bosonic or electronic. So this is just a single particle term. Now this TJK, these were the matrix, these are the matrix elements of the single particle operator in the complete basis set that you use for the second quantization. So if you use momentum, you will calculate the matrix elements of the single particle operator in momentum eigenstates. So for if you just had kinetic energy, you saw that we can write this for now. So this is general. This can be bosons or fermions. This is the notation we used in the first week. Now I'm going to assume that these are fermions, and the kinetic energy for the fermions in second quantized notation by going to by choosing momentum eigenstates, this can be written as h bar square k square over 2m ck dagger ck. So our goal is now, so this is how a general single particle term looks like. So our goal is to choose a complete basis and evaluate matrix elements of this term in the single, in the complete single particle basis. And the basis we are going to choose are block wave functions. Why we are choosing, so these are free particles in the presence of potential. We can go to this first Willwin zone, and all of the momentum states that are distinct can be represented in this first Willwin zone. So the reason we choose block wave functions as the complete basis is because we know that this term is already going to give rise to block bands. So because we have a periodic system, so now we are talking about the states we are choosing as the complete basis set to write down this operator in second quantized notation. These states must satisfy Bloch's theorem. So let's label these states, and let's call this term as H electron phonon. So I'm going to write H electron phonon. I'm going to keep that minus sign. Sum over n. I'm going to keep the sum over n. The sum over I over the single particle operators Ri over all electrons is going to disappear in the second quantized notation. And I will get un. That is just from this term, and now matrix elements of this. So it's k prime, sigma prime, any questions about this? So this, I've written this. This is general single particle operator. You have sum over j and k, which is labels for single particle states. Now my labels are k prime sigma prime, k sigma. So I should also have this sum over k prime, sigma prime, and k sigma. So this sum, jk, corresponds to sum j prime, k prime, sigma prime, k sigma. This tjk, the matrix element, is this matrix element. And then I have these operators. Yes.
Could you explain why in the sandwich there is only k prime and sigma prime and not k and sigma?
Oh, sorry. Typo. But that is a relevant question that comes now. Any questions so far? So we can use this symmetry that nothing in this term depends on sigma. we have this derivative that can bring down this momentum factor, so it will depend on k, but nothing depends on sigma. So the phonon interaction, the phonon term, if you don't have spin orbit coupling or any other complicated effect, the phonon interaction does not care, or the phonons do not care about the spin of the electrons. So this matrix element is going to be non-zero only if sigma is equal to sigma prime. So I can impose this constraint. I will get rid of one sum. Yeah, so I will impose this constraint later. Another thing is, now I can go to position representation for these states. In position representation, we will write this, let's just write it down. So we have minus sum over n u n dot k k prime sigma. And now in position representation, the scalar product becomes an integral. So integral over the coordinate r, the electronic coordinate. And then we have states that are now labeled with only k prime. So I've imposed a constraint that sigma prime must be equal to sigma. Any questions so far? Yes.
This is just the energy for one of the electrons, right?
So I had sum over, when I start here, I had sum over I in the first quantized notation. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to second quantized notation where. So this is where we have a sum over k. So we don't talk about individual particles anymore. We are going to talk about either fields or in this notation. Check the notation in the first week. This is always when we go from first quantization to second quantization. In second quantization, we are not going to talk about individual particles. We usually talk about fields. So we won't have these sums over all particles. Any other questions? Now we are going to use the property of Bloch wave functions, basically the Bloch's theorem, which says that this phi k, if you are going to translate it by a direct lattice vector, it should pick up a phase corresponding to e to the power I k dot rn naught. So this is just Bloch's theorem. So if you see something on the board that is missing a vector, just draw one. I probably would miss some of these. Now we know this from Bloch's theorem. So we can use this theorem when we evaluate this electron phonon interaction term, right? Now it turns out that there is a trick that we can use. And let me write this here. So this matrix element, k prime, the gradient for phononic coordinates and the interaction potential. when you convert it to an integral, so I'm going to replace, so I'm going to replace R by R minus Rn naught. So if you look at this integral, in this integral, I'm replacing R by what I wrote over there. So this matrix element that is written as an integral on that far side is going to look like the following. So you will have block, you will have ik rn naught, the factor coming from Bloch's theorem for both of these, which is ik minus k prime. And then you have this integral, r minus rn naught, phi k prime, r minus rn naught, del k, oh, sorry, del rn, v r minus rn, evaluated at the equilibrium position, and then another right. Now all of this I will write as S K, K prime. So this quantity S K K prime is an integral, basically this scalar product in Bloch wave functions. Yes?
What happened to the conjugate?
Oh, sorry. I forgot it. So there, we do have minus K prime here. Any other questions? So a key point is that notice that I have not put a label N here, right? The reason is the following. This is a potential. We know that this potential is periodic with the lattice translation vectors R and naught. So we calculate the gradient and we evaluate this at R and naught. So this thing is going to be a function of R minus Rn naught. Everything in this integrand is a function of R minus Rn naught, which is being integrated over. There is nothing on this side that depends on n. This is independent of small n. Yeah, there should be a minus sign, right? That's what. Well, we can, sorry. No? Okay. So, if you have any questions, just ask. I will write down now this H electron phonon. And now I'm going to put back this minus sign in S. So basically I have this minus sum over K, K prime sigma, S, K, K prime. Now I have this dot. Sum over n e to the power I k minus k prime dot rn naught un c k prime sigma so I've pulled out this all this integral this s k k prime outside the sum over n. Yes.
When you replace R by R minus I R naught, why in the potential we don't replace R but by the replacement?
So we have to take derivative, and once we take the derivative, it is evaluated at R naught. So in principle, it is there, but we keep in mind that this comes from the Taylor expansion, evaluate derivative evaluated at the equilibrium position.
Okay.
Is that?
So why we don't have r minus rn naught minus rn naught? Because which should change every r by the
because the potential is periodic. So we do use the fact, that's a good question. In principle, you would say it's 2 rn naught, but the potential is periodic. So any translation of lattice vector doesn't do much. So now, remember this un. So if this un was also not there, you could replace this sum over n by a delta function. But we have this un, which does depend on n. Now this un is the displacement of the ions. This we saw last time when we quantized phonons, that you can write this un as 1 over square root of n, sum over k, e to the power I k a n times the momentum in momentum space, and that this q k we can quantize right. So these are displacements in real space. They depend on n. Because we have a periodic system, it's useful to go to Fourier space. So this is the Fourier transformation. And then these q's we define. So these you will have a equivalent definition for p's. And we had a, so you can go back to notes from yesterday. There is a commutator between un and p n prime, which is I h bar delta nn prime. And using that commutator, we can go through the algebra. We find that these b operators, they satisfy the bosonic commutation relation. So now we are going to replace this un by this. And we are also going to generalize it a bit. So let me write down the general expression. What I'm going to replace un by, the vector un by, is the following. So I'm going to change the notation a bit. You expect un in one dimensions to be this and qk to be this. So if you put this qk, you'll get an expression. What I've written is the same expression, but it's somewhat generalized. I've assumed that there can be many phonon branches. So I have included an index lambda, where lambda runs over phonon, over all phonon branches. So we saw that we can have acoustic branches, optical branches, and so on. So this lambda, so we sum over all branches. And in three dimensions, you have another degree of freedom, that is polarization. What that means, so if you, this we derived for 1D. In 1D, the wave is propagating, wave propagation and the direction of displacement. absolutely must be in the same coordinate. In 3D, you can have different direction for displacement, and that is given by this A lambda. So this A lambda is basically polarization. For the lambda-ith branch. And then these B, the creation and annihilation operators, they are going to acquire this index lambda also. So for each lambda, for each branch, you have a mode that is given by this wave vector, which picks out the frequency. And for each of this mode, you have an annihilation operator and you have a creation operator. Any questions so far? So now, let me write down a mathematical trick. So if we have a sum over all reciprocal lattice vectors, G, delta function, say K minus K prime, comma minus G. This can be written as sum over G. This delta function can be written as 1 over N, sum over small n, e to the power I, k minus k prime, plus, let me just write down. This can be written as sum over g, 1 over n, sum over small n, e to the power I, k minus k prime, plus g dot rn naught. So I've just replaced this delta function by sum over n, this quantity. So here you get delta function k minus k prime and minus g. Now, by definition of reciprocal lattice vectors, e to the power g dot rn naught is 1. So this can be written as 1 over n sum over g sum over n e to the power I k minus k prime dot rn naught. So you see, nothing here depends on g. And we have a sum over g. G are reciprocal lattice vectors. And we know that all of these reciprocal lattice vectors, they span the entire reciprocal lattice. That's just by definition. That means if you sum over all g, you'll find all of the reciprocal lattice points, which is same as the number of ions you started with. So this sum over g simply gives you a factor n that cancels this n. So this quantity here can also be written as sum over n e to the power I k minus k prime dot rn naught. So now I'm going to put this un in here and write down the form of electron-phonon interaction Hamiltonian. So I'll find that electron-phonon Hamiltonian. This is going to be 1 over square root of n. Then I have a sum over k prime q n lambda sigma. I have s k prime dot with the polarization vector, a lambda square root h bar 2m omega lambda q, and then this factor e to the power I k minus k prime plus q. Dot Rn naught. And now I have all of the operators. So I would write this as b minus g lambda dagger plus b q lambda. And now I have the fermionic operators, that is ck prime sigma, ck sigma. Right? So I've just put all of these things back. Now here you can see that you have two fermionic operators, and so you have two terms, two fermionic operators, one bosonic creation operator, or two fermionic operators and one bosonic annihilation operator. So this is a new kind of term that you have not seen so far. So it's not a four-particle term. It's a three-operator term where their operators are also mixed. Any questions so far? So I can use this trick. So if I have ik minus k prime rn naught, I can convert this to sum over reciprocal lattice vector k minus k prime over g. So when we define this phonon displacement operators, we have this sum over q, or this ka. If you go back to your notes, you would see that we deduced that k will take values as 2 pi m divided by capital N a, and we will restrict small m, which is integer, from minus n by 2 to n by 2. What that corresponds to is that this sum over q, which comes from phonon, is restricted to first Brillouin zone. So I'm not going to write this in all our sums, but assume that this q is summed over the first Brillouin zone, and this n here, that is, when we sum over g, this sum over g is over the entire reciprocal lattice. So we sum over g, the entire reciprocal lattice, it spans the whole reciprocal lattice, that will cancel this n. So when we have a sum over reciprocal lattice vector, it runs over the entire reciprocal lattice. When we have sum over this momentum in reciprocal space, it is summed over the first Brillouin zone. So I can write basically this as any questions about this term?
Is there an extra minus sign, or what happened to that minus sign?
So we can absorb that minus sign in S.
In the integral, okay.
So what we are trying to do is, let's focus on these operator parts and these definitions. So I've just defined new quantities, right? S and all the other factors that you have, put them in there. Any questions so far? So what this suggests, this interaction, what it really means is the following. So now I'm drawing a diagram where time is in the vertical direction. You can have an electron coming in, and this electron, let's say, has state K, sigma. This electron can get scattered to a state K plus Q plus G, comma sigma. That's right, it's this electron. And in this process, you can either annihilate a phonon, and this we can write, if this is time, this we will write as this. And I'll put an arrow here. So this represents a phonon. Let's label this with the Q lambda phonon. So this represents this term. And I have another term that is the same thing. And now let me write this state here. So this is K plus Q plus G for electron. And so this is this term. You can create, let me put this arrow. The phonon state is again minus Q lambda phonon. Notice an interesting property here. Momentum is not conserved. Momentum is conserved only up to a reciprocal lattice vector. This is an important property for electron-phonon interactions. So now, any questions so far? So we are just focusing on these operators at the moment. We do notice that momentum is not conserved, but it's only conserved up to G. And next, we are going to break this sum over G into different parts.
Is that true for every kind of scattering? Wave scattering?
So in this case, it's because phonons have this periodicity. Mm-hmm. So in reciprocal space, when you scatter, adding a reciprocal lattice vector. So you remember we showed that any general vector or any general value of momentum or quasi-momentum in reciprocal space can be written as a momentum in the first Brillouin zone plus a reciprocal lattice vector. And that is precisely the reason why quasi-momentum is only conserved up to reciprocal lattice vector. So now I'm not going to write it down. This form is already here. The key point we'll take from this calculation is there are two fermionic operators. The momentum values of these are going to be important, bq and b minus q. The sum over g can be broken down into g equal to zero term plus sum over g not equal to zero. So we isolate these two contributions. The terms any questions? The terms that don't have vanishing reciprocal lattice vector, these are called umklapp processes. So these terms, they are called umklapp processes. What they basically mean is they involve exchange of a large momentum vector, a reciprocal lattice vector. These terms we are going to ignore. Hmm. Why? There is some justification. A, it will really make our calculations easier. The reason we'll ignore them is the following. So when we have a potential that goes as 1 over the modulus of the distance, when you take the Fourier transform, you can basically, let's define it with tilde, 1 over omega integral d cube r vr e to the power I q dot r. If you put this v of r as 1 over r, what you get is a term that is proportional to 1 over q squared, right? The Fourier transform of the potential. When you will have this g not equal to 0 term, these terms will have 1 over q plus g squared. In the Fourier, their Fourier coefficients will be shifted by a reciprocal lattice vector, by the reciprocal lattice vector. So g, if you look at your notes, g is basically some integer multiplied by primitive reciprocal lattice vector, which goes as 1 over the lattice constant. Lattice constant is typically very small, so these vectors are going to be very large. That is one motivation for ignoring these terms. But in general, you don't have to ignore it. You can treat them one by one. So you'll see that there are many reciprocal lattice vectors, right? Some of them are really large. Of course, they will have vanishing contribution. But if you want, you can include higher order terms. But the most relevant term is going to be g equal to 0 term.
When are they leading terms?
Sorry?
When are the umklapp processes like leading terms?
So sometimes you can impose a constraint that you provide during this scattering process. You have a system that spontaneously chooses this scattering process. What that means is you're providing an additional large momentum that can be absorbed during the scattering. So if you look at this scattering here, you absorb. This electron absorbs a phonon and gets scattered into another state. G equal to 0 means it's k, q, it goes to k plus q. You can impose this constraint that electron prefers to choose. So there are some systems which have some intrinsic properties that electron would prefer to be scattered with a finite g.
I mean, is it really momentum conservation is violated, or is it going?
It's because it's a periodic system, it's not violated. It's just that adding a g to quasi momentum does nothing.
Have we said anything on mean fringe electrons and
phonons? No, so far it's exact. We will make so we can proceed a bit further. We started late, so we are going to continue a bit longer. Next, what I'm going to do, so I will ignore these terms. We can include it later on. We'll only keep this term. We can also make some more simplifications. This term is still very general, even if we drop all other g's. We're going to ignore sigma, the spin. We're going to assume it does not play any important role. We are also going to assume that there is only one branch. This is just done to simplify the calculation. And the calculation we are after is, let me motivate it by joining these two diagrams. Now I can think of an interaction that electron at K sigma. Now we said we'll ignore sigma. So let's write K for electron. This is scattered into, say, K plus Q for electron. And I will have another electron coming in. This is K prime. And this will get scattered into K prime minus Q. And let me put an arrow here. And the phonon state, this is the phonon state. So what I'm going to write in the next next part of the lecture is I'm going to simplify this fair bit, and I'm going to use this notation here that H electron phonon is simply sum over KQ, some quantity F, KQ, so bosonic and fermionic operators, you can move them around, they commute with each other. I can write this as C, K plus Q, dagger, CK, B minus Q, dagger, plus BQ. Let me also write the electronic Hamiltonian, this is sum over K, energy K, CK dagger CK. So what we have so far, so what we are headed towards is this. What we have so far are these interactions. They are described by this Hamiltonian. So we have electrons, free phonons, and the interaction term. This F includes this, all of these quantities. What that means is this vertex here, this denotes the interaction strength. This is really capital F KQ. In general, you will have G also. We're taking G equal to zero. So this vertex here is F KQ. So this is just a notation. Everything, all the integrals over block wave functions is buried in this F polarization and so on. Now, a diagram like this, so you know that this would involve F here, that will be a function of K and Q, and this vertex is going to be F function of K prime and minus Q. Right, this we already know from this diagram, right? What we also know is that such a process is going to be second order in F, second order in this electron-phonon interaction strength. Now, this term, what it really represents is two electrons coming in, two electrons going out. So this term really represents interaction between electrons, which is mediated by phonons. This is different from QED. If you have electrons, interactions is mediated by photons. This is Coulomb interaction that is always repulsive. What we will find is that this interaction can actually be attractive for electrons. And it is this phenomena or this interaction that gives rise to the phenomena of superconductivity, where two electrons are attracted to each other and they form bound states. Any questions so far? So to derive the contribution to the Hamiltonian, to H electron phonon coming from such interactions, we can use a trick which is called Schiffer-Wolf transformation. This is another way of doing perturbation theory. There are many ways. So we'll learn this trick. Hopefully you can use this trick in any other problem. Sometimes it's easier. So let me write down what this trick really means. So the goal here in this Schiffer-Wolf transformation is to find a unitary transformation that you can apply to your Hamiltonian and go to this transformed and work with this transformed Hamiltonian. So the goal is to find a unitary transformation, U. I can write this unitary transformation as e to the power s. U is a general unitary, S is some general operator. Now, U dagger is going to be E S dagger. We choose S such that S dagger, so we impose this, we choose S such that S dagger is minus S. So if S dagger is minus S, U dagger is going to be minus S. So this is valid always. This you can always do. We'll restrict our choices to S such that S dagger is minus S. In a minute, we will see why this is useful at all. This is just definition. Now, we are going to look at H tilde, which is transformed Hamiltonian. This can be written as U dagger H U, which is e to the power minus S, H e to the power S. Now this, you can expand this exponential. You can expand this exponential, you will have many operators. And you can combine these operators again. And I'm sure you have seen this before. This can be written in terms of commutators. So this can be written as H minus commutator of SH plus minus 1 square by 2 commutator of S with commutator of SH and higher order terms. So now comes the trick. So we are going to assume this H, it has its H naught plus H electron phonon, where H naught is H electron plus H phonon. So we break it down like H naught plus this, because we want to treat this H electron phonon as perturbation. So the trick is to choose an S such that commutator of S and H naught is the perturbation. If we do this, plug, so this H is H naught plus H electron phonon, plug this in, what you will find is that H tilde is H naught minus S H electron phonon. Plus half S So from this H, I have two terms. I have H naught and H electron phonon. Now this is SH. I have commutator SH naught, which is equal to H electron phonon. So there will be one cancellation. What I'm left with is only commutator of SH electron phonon. And then contribution from here, I can write it, this H now again would be H naught plus H electron phonon. S commutator with H naught is H electron phonon. That term is written here. And then I will have this term. Now, any questions so far? So look at this term. So we do this. This is our choice. So we'll, the challenge in this way of doing perturbation theory is to find S that does this. Once you have this S, all you have to do is to calculate some commutators and you can evaluate the interaction Hamiltonian or the perturbation contribution to it if it can be treated as a perturbation. Now this H naught, nothing in H naught depends on F. For this commutator to be equal to H electron phonon, which goes with F, that means S must go linearly with F. That means these terms, this goes with F, F, F. This term is really order F cube. So we are going to ignore this term also. So what we are left with is a very simple Hamiltonian. Which is that H tilde, the transformed Hamiltonian, is H naught minus half commutator S H electron phonon. So I'm going to ignore all other terms are at least order F cube or higher.
Why is that order F cubed?
So there is a F in this. There is a F in S. And then S here. So this is the definition of S. H naught does not have a F. So the dependence, it must have an F. It must come from S. So now, if we calculate S, we are done. We can calculate this commutator and we'll find the contribution to the Hamiltonian. So the goal is to find S. So we'll make an ansatz. Let's say that this S can be written as sum over KQ. We already discussed that it should depend on F. So I'm going to make an ansatz with two variables, X and Y. And I'm going to impose this constraint that this S, when you take its commutator with H naught, which is these two quantities, must be equal to this. Imposing this constraint, I can calculate what X and Y are. So when I do this, using this ansatz and demanding that commutator of S with H naught is H electron phonon, you find that X must be equal to 1 divided by epsilon K plus Q minus epsilon K minus H bar omega Q, and Y must be equal to 1 divided by epsilon K plus Q minus epsilon K plus H bar omega Q. Any questions? So, because I already knew the answer, it's fairly easy. In general, thinking that this is where most of the problem lies, in writing down a good ansatz. So we had to choose these operators and this X and Y in this form. Yes?
What is the motivation? I mean, it's not obvious to me.
So the motivation is to show that this thing can be, electrons can attract each other. The motivation is to show that this potential, the contribution to the Hamiltonian, can be attractive.
And that's the minus sign. I'm just wondering, like, who would take that and think, I'm going to do this, you know?
There are many ways.
Just doesn't seem obvious, but okay.
Let's assume there is some very clever person who decides to do this. So there are other ways of doing this. This is not the only way of deriving. In fact, this Hamiltonian was derived in late 30s. And you can just use, even this heavy duty field theory notation was not even invented at that time. So this just makes the discussion easier. But the interaction being attractive, or this could be seen in other ways also. So this minus sign in X and this plus sign must be there so that this is satisfied. And now we can calculate this quantity, minus half S H electron phonon, because now we have S in terms of these operators. And when we do that, we'll find out that this H tilde is H electron plus H phonon. This is just coming from the H naught part. Plus, now we have this term, minus half this commutator, and this term will give you a sum over k prime q. You will have f kq F K prime minus Q saline K plus Q minus epsilon K whole square minus h bar omega Q square, then you have a numerator h bar omega Q, and then you have the operators C K plus Q dagger C K prime minus Q C K prime C K. Now when you will calculate these commutators, you will have a bunch of fermionic operators and bosonic operators. So you can write the commutator of AB as AB minus BA, move the operators around such that you have fermionic operators in the same place, and use, the only thing we are going to use is that the commutator of BQ with B minus Q dagger, this is equal to delta Q minus Q prime. So the bosonic operators, the commutator will, bosonic operators will disappear from it. They will be replaced by delta function. And you see we have one less sum over momentum. Yes?
One more dagger.
Oh yeah, sorry. Also, you remember somebody asked about the minus sign at some point. Yeah. So this is just a matter of definition. You see here we have two Fs. So even it doesn't matter, this minus sign squares to positive. So this is really the electron-electron interaction mediated by phonons. Now, this term is a bit weird. Why? Look at this denominator. These are electronic and a difference of electronic energies that is coming from the scattering. So you take K and K plus Q, for example, over there. These are differences only in the electronic energies. And this term is the energy of the phonon. If this term is greater than the energy of the phonon, or the difference in electronic energies is greater than the energy of the phonons, the interaction is repulsive. However, if this term is smaller than h bar omega q, this term becomes attractive. Any questions? So, next, we can ask the question, okay, it becomes attractive in this regime. Is it possible to have such a regime? Turns out, yes. And in fact, we can consider two electrons. So this term, again, is depicted in a diagram here. So this really is an attractive term, provided that this quantity is larger than this quantity. So consider Q going to zero. Now, when Q goes to zero, what happens to phonons? So we are right now talking about this term, h bar omega Q. Well, there are acoustic phonons which will vanish as Q goes to zero linearly. Right? There are also optical phonons that don't vanish, but that give you a constant. So let me try to remind you, we had this kind of dispersion. For phonons, acoustic branches and optical branches. For optical branches, as Q goes to zero, you have a constant here, right? So as Q goes to zero, omega q is going to be a constant not equal to zero for optical phonons. Next, consider, so this is the Q we are going to look at, Q going to zero, optical phonons. Next, consider two electrons, and let's make these two electrons close to the Fermi C. What that means is, now consider two electrons, one with K plus Q. Close to the Fermi C. So they are very close. Both of them are close to the Fermi C. So the energy difference between them, Ek plus Q minus E epsilon K, this whole square, this energy is, we know, is close to the Fermi C, if you have, let's assume parabolic dispersion. So we know that this energy for free, so you have Fermi C if you start with non-interacting electrons. And this energy close to the Fermi C can be calculated by replacing the wave vectors by the Fermi wave vector. Both of them are very close to the Fermi C. So one way to look at this difference is I will set one of wave vector for one electron at the Fermi surface, and the other one will be slightly above or below the Fermi surface. By the way, at zero temperature, it can never be below the Fermi surface because everything below Fermi surface is occupied. So it must be above the Fermi surface. So the key point is this can be written as h bar square kf plus q square over 2m. Minus h bar square kf square by 2m. This goes to zero as q goes to zero. So you can expand this square. The first term will precisely cancel this. Then you have a term q square and a linear term q times kf. As q goes to zero, this difference vanishes or becomes very small. So this means that in this regime, when you have two electrons close to the Fermi C, this difference is smaller than the frequency of the phonons. So in this case, you are going to have attractive interaction between the electrons. And this, when you have two electrons close to the Fermi C, this gives rise to what is called superconducting instability, and the system goes through a phase transformation and becomes a superconductor. Yes?
Wait, sorry. So is the point that it goes to zero faster than h bar omega squared? Like, because the difference is always going to go to zero when q goes to zero.
So when q goes to zero, this is going to be I'm talking about this. Okay. This does not depend. Sorry.
Yeah.
So this is the key point.
Is it that they're more likely to be optical phonons if they're next to the Fermi C?
So this is where the phonon structure for materials, it is usually quite complicated. The unit cell is quite different. So this really depends on the material. Not all materials become superconducting. So it really does depend on whether this constraint is met or not.
Well, I'm just wondering why it is that we chose for the electrons to be close to the Fermi C.
So because if you have very far from the Fermi C,
yeah,
then this term can be larger than the. So I really wanted to choose two electrons,
yeah,
such that this is still small.
I don't understand. Like, far away from the Fermi C, Q can still be small, and then the difference between those two.
Yeah. So if so,
is that's the dispersion relation near the Fermi C, or?
Yeah. So we are the Fermi C is calculated as h bar kf squared over 2m. That's a Fermi energy. So the Fermi energy is defined as h bar squared kf squared over 2m. So energy of an electron precisely at the Fermi energy is this. Just a bit away is given by replace kf by kf plus some small momentum around it.
And so you're just saying far away from the Fermi C, we don't know that a small difference in Q could make the energy difference huge. Okay. Right.
But the point is of why we are dealing with Fermi C is because I would use this when I discuss superconductivity. So we are really starting with filled Fermi C,
yeah.
And we are going to allow small variation, just the electrons can go above the Fermi C. And for those small deviations, we know for sure that electrons can attract each other.
I have another question.
Yes.
So you say that it's attractive when the energy difference is small because you have the energy becomes negative?
We just have a minus sign here.
Okay. I see why that would be attractive, like in momentum space. It would bring states closer together in momentum. But why does that mean it's attractive in position space?
So in position space, in momentum, quick answer is because it's easier to see in momentum space. But in real space, you really have to, it's a bit difficult. And a cartoon is typically used. But what I'm going to draw here, there are limits to how far you can push this. You can think of this in the following way. Imagine you have ions. And these ions are connected with springs. And consider a snapshot where locally you have one electron. So say you have an electron coming in. Now electron is at the Fermi C, at the Fermi surface. So you can go back to your notes and you can see you can define a Fermi velocity at the surface. This Fermi velocity is typically very large. So what that means is if you start in the situation, electron is going to move very fast, it's going to move away from this position. These positive charges, positive ions that saw this electron, they are heavier and they respond slowly. So this is where the retarded nature of the interaction becomes important. So these positive ions are going to move in to where the electron was. Now, another electron would see this as a net positive charge that attracts this second electron. So if you now integrate out the phonons, it's as if the first electron attracted the other electron to where it was. So in real space, you can use this kind of analogy. So are you convinced that electrons can be attracted? You need phonons.
So what is it? Like, why does the other electron get attracted? Because the energy...
So this electron moves, and then you have these positive ions move towards it, and locally it seems like there is some net positive charge that will attract the other electron just by...
In general, if it's attractive in momentum space, is it also attractive in position space?
So it would depend on not necessarily in, like if you're close to Fermi, so not necessarily. The reason is, as you can guess, we have written this assuming some wave functions. We went to momentum space by definition of these phis, right? So they can have, say you have a polynomial or something that changes sign, and then you can have, so you have to be careful with this analysis. You should do it in both. But in our case, it's simpler. Yes.
we in principle kind of use this condition to approximate the transition temperature?
Yes. So when we will do, so once again, now we have these four operators in electrons. This is still not tractable problem. It's still not easy to solve. What we'll do is we'll make mean field approximation. And using that approximation, we can say something about the transition temperature. What we will end up doing is we'll bury all of these things. We'll make some mean field approximation, and we'll bury all of these things in a quantity called the order parameter, or we'll define a new quantity, and that then the transition temperature would depend on.
So would it be reasonable to say that the variance of Q is proportional to the temperature, or something like that?
So it's that is not as straightforward, because when we'll do this, there will be integrals over momentum space involved. And also, it would depend on this interaction strength. So we can take simple model, let's say the interaction potential just a constant, and make some approximations, and then we might see something. But in general, I would say it's a much more complicated thing, because what you are saying is only this term. We really have sum over all this involving this. So it's this term is easy to see, goes as q square or something, but you have q from other terms also, right?
No, I was just thinking in terms of the Fermi Dirac distribution, the width of the, how far away from the Fermi surface you can actually have scattering would be dependent on temperature.
Yes, I think some, at least in part, this will be answered when we discuss superconductivity. Okay, so let's end the lecture today. Let's continue tomorrow.